So good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. And there are people live streaming this morning, so welcome to them. Just a little reminder about live streaming for members of FCM. To be honest, what I value most is live encounter with human beings. As opposed to virtual, I think there's something to be said by human beings being present to each other, and especially in receiving the Dharma. There is a living transmission, an energetic transmission that goes on when one is in the presence of the Dharma and in the community that is practicing the Dharma. The reason we started the live stream is we have many members who are outside the Tampa Bay area who cannot be here, or sometimes people are sick or other reasons. Having said that, if anybody is listening, if you are in the Tampa Bay area and you just didn't feel like coming this morning, maybe you didn't get a good night's sleep, or you know you wanted to stay home in your pajamas, that is not good. We come to Sangha not just for ourselves. We come for others. We come for ourselves, but we come for others. We are here for others. Thich Nhat Hanh is a calligraphy. I am here for you. So there's a reason we show up. Even if I don't want to show up for me, I show up for you. That makes life easier. As long as we are always living life from the me, we have a very narrow, constricted life, a disconnected life. And then often people wonder, why do I feel so disconnected? Why do I feel so separated? Why do I feel so alienated from others? Because we live that way. We think that way. There is a way out, and I'll talk about that today. So that's a little chastisement. If anybody's listening, who lives, you know, within commuting distance of the center, but are home enjoying this talk in their pajamas this morning. But this will be posted on the YouTube channel. And good. So, yesterday we had a four-hour workshop called the Profound Psychology of the Yogacara, the Buddhist teachings, the Buddhist philosophy, psychology called Yogacara, the practice of practice, which was sort of in the development of Indian Buddhism, or Buddhism in India, and the development of the various schools, meditative schools, and psychological understandings in the what's called the Mahayana Buddhism, the Great Path, of which we are part of. The Yogacara was considered the pinnacle and really is the psychological, philosophical basis of Zen and Dzogchen and all the meditative traditions. So yesterday I facilitated a four-hour workshop. There were about 50, 60 people there. Anybody? Probably a lot of them aren't home. They could be the ones who are home today. You know, how much Dharma can one take in one weekend? One probably needs a break from it. But how many people were there yesterday? Because how many? So most of you weren't. So what I want to talk about today is actually related to the workshop yesterday and the Yogacara. So the Yogacara is really essential for everyone here and everybody who's really practicing, because it is the map of consciousness that allows us to understand why we are the way we are, why the world is the way it is. And most important for those of us on the path of change and transformation, it clearly lets us know what our challenges are, right? Without that deep understanding of the nature of mind and conditioning, it is very easily to have an intention of transformation and change or healing or whatever one would call it, but really never really accomplish it at any deep level. Even though we are seemingly making efforts in the direction of. And it is because we do not understand, really, it's a little strong to say, what we're up against within our own minds. So again, the Yogacara is deep and vast. There's a very good book called Living Yogacara by a Japanese expert in it. It's a very good translation. It's very good. It's a little more academic, but it's very clear. It's called Living Yogacara. And then Thich Nhat Hanh has a wonderful book, his own take on it, which I recommend you read second, called Understanding Our Mind. It used to be called Transformation at the Base. So I'm not gonna, since there were people who were here yesterday and I can't compile it all, and I really want to focus on the transformation thing today. But basically, very simply, what the Yogacara teaching makes us see is that there, this mind, whose mind? Our mind, this mind that all of us have, has 8 levels. And it's not like you can see them, but you can understand them. The upper 6 levels are obvious. Seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, sensing, right? These are our 5 senses, and they're 5 ways, conscious ways, that we know the world, right? And then there is our thinking mind, right? That has the ability to perceive and cognate and remember and, all kinds of things, right? It has logic, it has all kinds of very wonderful capacities. But it thinks, okay? And all of us are aware of that, right? And many people think that this is my mind, right? And especially they identify their mind as their thinking mind. So therefore, their process of transformation and healing goes on here, right? I just got to change. I just got to read a lot. I got to think a lot. I got to listen to a lot of talks. And, right? And then I'll change. And there are many people here in this room who have read a lot, thought a lot about Dharma, listened to a lot of talks, and haven't really changed much at a deep level. Transformation has not occurred. Transformation means you start here and you become something else. You transform. In Buddhism, we call that transforming, become from being an ordinary human being into being a Buddha, an awakened person. And that awakening all goes on within our mind. Right? So, this is what most human beings think is who they are, right? Because that is what is obvious. That is what is known. But according to Yogacara, there are deeper levels of the mind that are beyond our capacity to see directly, but can be inferred. One is called the storehouse consciousness. Within the storehouse consciousness, the storehouse is storing. It is the repository of the impressions or the seeds of all the thoughts, actions of body, speech, and mind that we have been involved with in our whole life. Okay? They are the repository of all of that. That is why we just don't live in the present. Right? Our senses are in the present. Thoughts are arising in the present. Why is it that we have stuff? Why is it that we have a full range of stuff that we're constantly dealing with, that are constantly arising within us, that we're constantly struggling with? Where's all that coming from? Right? That's all in our storehouse. And life and situations are constantly triggering. It is an endless process of things arising, seeds arising, going down. Some are strong formations. That's all in our alaya, our storehouse consciousness, okay? So that explains, and that's, you know, The conscious mind and the senses are the tip of the iceberg. The other 90% are not seen, but it's the biggest part of us. The storehouse consciousness. If the storehouse is filled with wonderful things, we have a wonderful mind. If our storehouse consciousness has a lot of garbage, a lot of junk, a lot of toxic stuff that we have stored down there during the course of our life, that will also perfume us. Is that clear? And that's not the thing about the storehouse is it doesn't judge. Okay, it's like a storehouse, right? It's like a closet. You can put anything you want in it, like a garage. Okay, you can put any damn thing you want in it. Is that clear? Right? The garage doesn't care, right? You want to put junk in the garage, you can put junk in the garage. Okay, you want to put beautiful things in the garage, treasures, you can put. The garage doesn't care. Our storehouse doesn't care. It stores whatever is put down there through the actions of our body, speech, and mind. Okay? So that's big. And that's constantly conditioning us, right? Right? Because it's like this endless process. It's coming up, it's going down, it's coming up, and every time it is intensifying or non-intensifying by how we respond to it. Then there is, at the seventh level of consciousness, there is what's called the manas. This is the sense of self. Right? We all have this sense of self. It's somehow a me. Right? Everybody know what that is? That subjective sense of me? It's a feeling, I'm me, right? Which we all have as a subjective sense. The problem with manas as an active thing, it's narcissistic at this point. It's not that I have a subjective sense, but my subjective sense of me is a real thing. And it is the most important thing in my life, right? So manas, left to itself, is totally narcissistic, self-oriented, egocentric. Is that clear? And what it does is, very simply, it takes all the things in the storehouse consciousness and all the things that are going on up here in the upper levels of the mind, it claims them for itself. Right? Me, 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 I. Okay? Now, this is what's going on. This is what we're all dealing with. And yet, we are here, all of us, for one degree or another, because we want to change. Somehow this whole thing is not creating happiness for ourselves, is it? It's not creating ease and well-being, and we're not open-hearted, and we're not all the things that we would like to be, right? Is that true? No, it doesn't. That, an egocentric, ignorant life, ignorant of really how things really are, does not produce happiness. According to Buddha, it produces only suffering. Sometimes, you know, when the ego gets its way, it does get happy. When things are going the self's way, it does feel good. But when things aren't going the way it wants, the world's not going the way it wants, it's not happy. And so we're endlessly going back and forth according to our causes and conditions. So it fundamentally doesn't work. Now, what an understanding of Yogacara and the eight, and again, I'm very simplifying something, is that if we want to truly change, we have to, as Thich Nhat Hanh says, transformation has to occur at the base. It can't just occur up here, right? It has to occur within the storehouse, and it has to occur within that sense of self. That has to be transformed. So the question becomes, how do you transform something you can't see? Right? That you can only know by inference. Right? It's funny, you know what it's like? It's like all the stuff that's going on in our climate. Right? You see, it's really the same thing. Right? If we just live day to day and look around, everything looks fairly normal, doesn't it? Maybe some days are a little warmer, a little colder, sometimes the storms are a little stronger, but it's more or less seems the same, doesn't it? And the causes of any changes are not obvious to us. I mean, does any of us really understand all the causes and conditions that create weather and climate? No. We don't have a clue. We're present to it. We know it's hot and cold and rainy, but we don't know deeply what's causing it all, do we? For that, we rely on who? Scientists. People who study this stuff deeply and understand the causes and conditions of weather. Is that true? They can tell us, why things are the way they are. Okay? The Yogacarans were the scientists of the mind. They looked deeply into the mind, and they very much were able to categorize exactly what's going on. And like the climate scientists today, who tell us, even if we change everything today, we may not be able to really significantly change the unfolding of what's already been put into play. Is that true? Yeah. Because the forces are deep. And the actions of human beings within this world have been going on for a long time. And they have basically changed the patterns. Is that true? Yeah, we all know that. Not anything new. So in the same way, you see, if we don't look deeply and examine the nature of our own experience, the nature of our own mind, right, we're also dealing with patterns that we have been conditioning for decades and decades and decades, depending on how old we are, and maybe even lifetimes, if you believe in past lifetimes. Okay, it doesn't matter. Right? So that's what we're dealing with. And so even if today I make the commitment, from now on I am going to be loving and open and compassionate, non-judgmental, totally accepting, right, of all human beings, right? What do you think is going to happen? Well, that's a little strong, but it doesn't set aside that storehouse and everything that we've done. In the same way, if human beings, again, all of a sudden change their patterns of consumption and all that today, energy use and all that today, it will not fundamentally change things immediately, will it? That's just the truth. But if we want to make a valiant effort at transformation, we have to understand what's going on at the base. So we cannot reject ourselves. We cannot be frustrated with ourselves. We cannot judge ourselves. The first step is we have to be what? Totally open. And be willing to use mindfulness to deeply examine our life. And to deeply examine our life also means to make a profound examination of the causes and conditions that are unfolding in our life. And to understand what has caused them. Now, this is not an endless revisiting of life stories and early childhood memories, okay? But this is understanding the unfolding of our life by through examination. So we, you know, again, if we want to change, you know, the unfolding of what's going on right now in our climate, we have to kind of understand the causing conditions that have led to this. So if we want significant change, we have to change those causes and conditions. Is that clear? Or else we don't know what to change or how to change. So mindfulness is not simply, you know, a calming. Many of us, you know, today use mindfulness as a kind of a therapeutic thing, which is fine. I mean, it's helpful, you know, to calm ourselves and quiet ourselves and kind of just be able to get through the day or the week. I mean, that's good. I mean, we need all the help we can get. But in the Yogacara or the Buddhist tradition, that's not what it's about. It's a capacity of the mind that we are using as essential to our process of transformation at the base. We cannot see the storehouse, but we can smell it. Everybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you know there's something, you walk into your kitchen and you know there's something, right? You open your fridge, right? That's the sign, right? Something's rotting, right? And you see, and so we need to have that self-awareness, because it's from the odor, inner in Buddhism, that would be the effects. It's like, yeah, these thoughts are coming up, these reactive emotional things, you know, something happens and immediately I'm irritated, immediately I'm angry, immediately I'm scared, immediately I'm sad, immediately I'm hurt, immediately, you know, as if any of that is true. None of that is true. All those responses are solely arising because of our causes and conditions. Because the person next to you may be having the same experience in the same situation and have a totally different response. Is that true? Why is that? Because there's no objective reality. And what we're talking about is, unfortunately, for most of us, our life and all our experiences is another part of Yogacara. The storehouse consciousness, the self consciousness, and the upper levels consciousness are called the three transformative consciousnesses. The three subjective, which means we think we're in reality, but we're only in our own subjective reality, which is a little frightening. And it really helps you understand what's going on in the world. Okay. So, where do we get criteria that is not subjective? Well, we have the teachings. And in the Yogacara teachings, they have, they're called the 52 mental factors, positive and negative. And they really are very clear. It's kind of wonderful. They're very clear. These are the wholesome ones. These are the unwholesome ones. What is a Buddha? A Buddha is a human being who has a mind that is only made up of wholesome factors. Okay? That's a healthy human being. Ultra healthy, uber healthy. Okay, that's a Buddha. Over here, right, you have another human being whose mind is only made up of all the unwholesome factors. I won't name any names. And, okay, and that's at the other extreme, okay? Most of us are where? Somewhere in the middle, depending on our own causes and conditions, right? But, so, mindfulness allows us, and self-examination allows us to be aware of who we are in life And the factors that have conditioned us to have the sort of cognitive and emotional life that we have. The Dharma, the teachings, give us the map to health, to wholeness, to goodness. So practice, then, is about how do I work at the upper levels of the mind where we live in a way that is transforming my base consciousness. Okay. Again, so just very simply. So let me say one other important thing to everyone. Stop taking yourself so personally. Give it up, right? This is not personal. This is the wonderful thing about these teachings. It is describing a process, right? It is describing a process. And if you understand the process clearly, and you understand what causes suffering, what causes happiness, and you clearly understand you can make a choice, right? That's all that's going on. It's not about you. It's just a process. And yet, what these teachings give us is the idea that I am the driver of this process. Okay? Or no, I'm not the driver. I'm the gardener. Okay? Because the driver sounds like it's mine. You see what I'm saying? It's like I'm the gardener. I'm the cultivator. I'm the one who now, see, up to now, I didn't get that, you see. I had no idea that I was in charge of my life and I could direct it to where I wanted it to go, you see? I just been going along like in Buddhism, you know, like the analogy, it's not Buddhism, but, you know, it's like a pool. You know, you play pool and one hill, it's another, you know, in the way, anybody play pool? You know, it's been many years. But, you know, it's like how you hit the cue ball, then hits another ball, and how it's hit and where it's hit and the spin and all that, then makes that one go off in another direction. And then it hits another one and that one goes off in another direction, right? And it's just this energetic thing that just keeps pushing things in different directions blindly just because of, right, this energy. But if you know how to play pool and you're good at it, you know what? Yeah, if I develop some skill, I can make these balls go where I want them to go. So we want to begin to understand that there is this process that's been going on since beginningless time. There is this storehouse consciousness. There are these seeds and formations endlessly arising. And there is this sense of self, which I have been, you know, strengthening for decades and decades. And it is the cause of my suffering. And now, this is the wonder of the conscious mind. See, this is all going on the conscious mind, right? I'm aware of this now. Right? I'm aware of this. I understand what's going on. I understand what's been driving me all these decades. And now I can be conscious. I can be aware. I can be mindful. And I can be very deliberate about how I lead my life. I can be very deliberate in what I cultivate and what I stop cultivating or don't cultivate. Any questions? Oh, it's not 10:16, is it? But it is 72 degrees, so that's accurate. Anyhow. We'll have to change it later. Let's see. I have no idea. It's okay, I can just add an hour. Thank you, all right. These rudimentary skills that we learned early on are very helpful. So, any questions about what's been shared so far? I mean, forgive me, and I know most of you weren't at the workshop yesterday, and I encourage you, because this tells us what's going on within our own minds, and the minds of everyone. And it really helps us understand what practice is about, because oftentimes, many people these days, we do practices. I do my practice over here, I do my breath practice here, I do my this practice there. We don't get the whole, it's like, I understand the climate's changing, so, I do recycling, and I've become a vegan, and I really have gotten a much more efficient car, right? How come nothing's changed? How come nothing's changed? We won't go into that, but it's like that, It's like, oh, that's why. Okay. So we've all made changes. Everybody here has made changes in their life, and yet we are still here because we still have not transformed ourselves at the base. So any questions about this? Please don't be shy, because this is important before we go on. Yes. And I, there is this, you probably haven't heard, but there is a virus people are very concerned about. So we are not using the mic, but I will remember to repeat the question. So try to keep the question succinct. Okay. Yeah, so the question is, one has these insights, one has these moments, and where one moves one's life and one's in different directions, right? Probably we're all here because of that. And yet you're saying there still seems to be so much. All right. So Yogacara says, the subjective consciousness of the storehouse, the energy of the storehouse and the seeds is continuous. Right? Anybody ever sit in meditation? What do you notice about continuous, isn't it? Stuff just keeps coming, endlessly coming. Even, dreams are your alaya. Just, the conscious mind's asleep. Your alaya is still, storehouse still putting up stuff in its own language. Okay? The sense of self is continuous. The upper levels are interruptible. Thoughts flicker. This thought, that thought. Insight. You can't even remember your insight from yesterday. What was that insight I had yesterday? Right? Aspiration. You set your intention in the morning, 5 minutes out the door, it's like same old, same old. Huh? Anybody notice that? There seems to be a lot of acknowledgement. Why is that? Because the upper level of the mind is interruptible. Well, the others are continuous. Is that clear? What is the antidote? The antidote is continuous practice at the upper levels. I mean, that is the way. Okay, so when you've heard me or other people saying our practice needs to be continuous, no time off, you can't just practice when you're here, you just can't practice when you're in public, but when you go home, it's same old, you cannot just have a public face where you're very kind and sweet and noble, and then but inside you're just kind of churning with judgment and anger and bitterness, and you know what I mean? You can't do that. Why? Because everything, all the actions of our body, speech, and mind are leaving impressions in our storehouse. Okay? The storehouse will take anything. Right? It doesn't have the ability to go, well, you know, they really mean better, and I know they have a good, you know. I know they want to be a kinder person, and just because right now they're thinking a lot of unkind thoughts, well, I'll let that pass. Mm-mm. It doesn't work that way, and it's not personal. It's just not the way it works. It stores everything. Okay? So, if we want to transform, our practice has to be continuous. Now, does everybody here have unstoppable continuous practice? Not yet. Good, right? So practice has to be, we have to start where we are, but there has to be that energy of moving, you know, of moving, right? So let's say our practice now, maybe we remember our practice 3 times a day. Is that a little high to start, or? All right, so we do our self-examination. Yeah, that's really where I'm at. Right, and where you're at is not how you present to the world. That's acting. Right? And most of us are not in the Actors Guild, okay? We're not professional actors. That's acting. The self-examination is being very real about, you know, being real, okay? You all know what I mean, okay? That's where it is, right? And then we move forward from there. But again, the more that we can remember I said, mindfulness is not just being present, it's remembering. Smriti means remembering, recollecting. Oh yeah. I remember. When do we remember? You know when the best time to remember is? When it's happening. The best time to remember is not when you're home, you know, and setting your aspiration or reading your Dharma books, and, you know, that's good, you see. But transformation really occurs during the day, in our lives. Now, yes, let me just say it. So what does that mean? Let's just take anger. And anger, again, it's not like everybody here is angry. I mean, some people here, anger may be their thing. Some people here, anxiety, worry may be their thing. Somebody else may be, sadness may be their thing. Hurt may be their thing. Jealousy may be their thing. I mean, you know. Anyhow, if you go into the mental factors, you'll see everything you have is listed. Okay, it's not like, you know, we think we're so unique. Unfortunately, we're not. Okay. So when does transformation occur? Transformation implies what? Something becoming something else, right? That's transformation. Change can be incremental, but transformation, it means something becomes something else. Mindful. Again, anger, I'm just picking because it's very obvious. I am mindful. I am aware that anger, irritation has arisen in me. Oh, I remember unwholesome emotion that I really don't want to cultivate anymore. Oh, don't cultivate. Weakens our seeds, our formation of anger. Right? Is that clear? In that moment, we're weakening it by not feeding. But if we don't do the transformative piece, which is what? So the opposite of an angry thought could be a what? A kind thought or an understanding thought. Right? Well, they're suffering, or they really, you know, didn't mean to say, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, oh, that's transformation. You see? I'm not only weakening the unwholesome, I am creating the wholesome. Which is then leaving, see? So the afflictive or the unwholesome seed now goes back into the storehouse, not intensified like we usually do. Because when we're angry, when we're anxious, when we're sad, when we're hurt, when our feelings get hurt, what do we do? Is it just a one-time affair? Tell the truth. What do? Ruminate. And every time we're ruminating, what are we doing with whatever that? What? Strengthening. Strengthening, 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 strengthening. And then we wonder why it keeps coming back. And why it happens so quickly. Wow, I can't believe it. I just got swept away. Well, the only reason we get swept away by these afflictive emotions is because we've cultivated them unconsciously, not knowing better. Is that clear? So the transformation, this is the practice, this is the daily practice. This is the daily life practice. We are aware, we are mindful, we have criteria and aspiration, very important. But most importantly, when things arise that we have discerned are unwholesome, unwholesome meaning they do not support the transformation that I seek for myself. I am aware. Don't get frustrated that it came up. Anybody ever get frustrated because anger came up, fear came up, lust came up, craving came up, you know, anybody ever get frustrated? Disgusted with themselves? You know, disgust is another unwholesome emotion. You see, it's like, you know, we already have one unwholesome emotion. Well, I'll just cultivate some other ones. Why not? Right, self-pity. I mean, we can, you know, you see, it's just endless. Don't do it. It's not helpful. And it's just deepening the morass of suffering. Okay, simply. Again, if you understand Yogacara, you understand whatever your go-to afflictive emotion is. Why is it arising? Now you all know it's arising. Why? What? Because it arose in the past. That's the only reason it arose. It's arising now. And the more stronger it's been in the past, the more it's going to arise more often. Is that clear? That's all that's going on. So when it arises, don't give it don't kind of get into a thing with it. Like it's personal. It's not personal. Right? Because you didn't call it up, did you? Think about it. Did you call it up? You call it up, Cece? Sit there going, let me see, how do I want to respond to this? Do I want to generate jealousy or do I want to generate anger? Maybe I'll generate some self-hatred. You know what I'm saying? We don't. It's not like that, is it? No, it's just what? It's just there. Right? Why is it there? Because of just past cultivation. So if we are mindful and practicing, we are aware that this has arisen, this historical conditioning, habit, whatever you want to call it, has arisen. The awareness, the mindfulness gives us space. Space to do something different. If there's no space, forget it. That's why we're learning here in meditation how to calm and quiet the mind and how to sit. See, that's what we were doing earlier. We're sitting. Stuff is arising during the half-hour meditation. Did everybody have any stuff arise? Thoughts arise, feelings arise, stories arise, right, okay. But we're learning what? Not to, just to be aware of it. Give it space. It'll go. But with the afflictive ones, we want to be aware. You might even say to yourself, aware anger has arisen, Fear has arisen. Jealousy has arisen. Self-hatred, whatever your go-to is. You're aware of it. You don't have to do anything for a moment. Just relax and be present to yourself. Feeling the one. Okay. And then remember. Remember what? Is this something you want to be cultivating, intensifying, strengthening? That you want to be, make sure that it's there and available to you in the future? Is that what you want to do? Can you see this little process? You laugh because when you stop and you think that way, change is possible. But we don't think that way, do we? Because we love our stuff. We even love our painful stuff. Because why? We attach my to it. My anger, my fear, my issues, my unresolved this, you know. And once it's got my on it, once it's me, we are very attached to it. It's not you. It's just your habit and just your conditioning. It arises, you see it, you give it some space. You don't feed it, you don't ruminate, you don't obsess, because you know now what? It's only intensifying. I mean, how many times do we need to go over something? What? How many times you really, all right, one time somebody did something, you're angry, okay? You're hurt, you're disappointed, okay? All right? I mean, how many times do you need to repeat it to yourself? I don't know, how many times do you think you need? I mean, are we so dense that we need to repeat it, over and over and over again? No. Bad habit causes suffering. We're aware. We see it. We remember unwholesome. I don't want to cultivate this. We remember to cultivate what? Understand. Patience. Right? Wholesome. That also will leave an impression. The more we do this, this is the daily work. This cultivation of seeds. Now, that's how we transform the storehouse. But then there is the manas. Thich Nhat Hanh calls the manas the lover. There's a part of us that just loves ourselves. Right. Loves our thoughts, loves our creations, loves our dramas. I mean, people love their dramas. Why do they love their dramas? They're often painful dramas. You know why they love their dramas? Because we're the central character. What could be more wonderful than endlessly having dramas in which I'm the main character? Well, we have our own little Netflix inside ourselves, just endlessly having our own dramas. So, manas is really the most pernicious. So, there is nothing wrong with having a subjective sense of self, but, and again, this is a whole other body about that there's in Buddhism. The self that appears is not anything of any solidity or reality at all. It is just a subjective sense. But when we reify it into me and give it all these stories and all these identities and all these histories and all this, me, my ideas, my values, my this, my that, which is always opposed to everybody else's, right? It just strengthens that self, which just makes the whole thing more difficult. So we need to loosen the knots of self, the tentacles of self, which contaminate everything, right? Everything. The self takes everything in the storehouse as itself, and also it attaches I, me, my to all our thoughts. Right? So we need to loosen that. Many ways to loosen self. That's the practice. Generosity is a great antidote. Learning to give to others. Your time, your energy, your love, your kindness, your money, all the things we hold for ourself. My needs, my... How do we lessen that hold of self? For those people online, you know, we come to Sangha even though the I is telling us what? I don't feel like it. Can you see? All day long, our I is telling us what? I don't feel like it. I. I don't feel like doing this. I don't want to do this. I don't need to do this. I. How would you turn that around? What's the best for everyone? What's the best for everyone? What if that was our criteria for the actions of our body, speech, and mind? How is this helpful to others? What if that's our criteria? Can you feel the difference? The criteria is, how will this benefit me? Many people say that. How is this going to benefit me? You know what? It's not going to benefit you. But it may benefit others. Try that, John. That's selfless, right? And that helps loosen that knot of self, which again, I assure you, for those of us who have entered the ethereal planes of Dharma and meditation and spirituality, I assure you, your self has come right along. And is still up to its same stuff. Have you noticed that? Yeah, don't be surprised. Because remember, the manas, the self, sense of self is continuous. It doesn't like go, you know, sort of like we're entering Florida Community Mindfulness. Self can't enter here, you know. And we have no power to do that. It comes right into the hall with us. Right? Goes on retreat with us, you know. When the storehouse consciousness is transformed, it becomes mirror-like wisdom. When the manos is transformed, it becomes the consciousness of equality. And when the thinking, discerning mind becomes transformed, it becomes prajna, it becomes wisdom, it becomes intelligence. So these three consciousnesses, storehouse, self, thinking, they're all involved in transformation. This is Yogacara. And transformation at the base. Questions? I mean, what's not clear? Yes, Leanne. And please, people who object to anything or really don't get anything or how would I apply it here, please ask. I mean, this is, you know, we only have a few moments together. And again, these kinds of conversations and these kind of topics are not the kind of our usual stuff, is it? No. It's very rare that we can talk about these things. So please... field. Ask questions. Yes, Leah. And keep it short since I got to repeat it. I mean, concise, not sure.
Yes.
You know, yes, of course. Retreats are essential part of our practice because they give us a chance to get away from, you see. I mean, especially, well, all right, first of all, let me say, yes, retreats are very important. Because why? Because for most of us as lay people, we are practice, our meditation is unfolding within the course of a very busy life with lots of responsibilities, and our minds are just full of this or that, right? So for most of us, our daily life is sort of like, just can I maintain some level of sanity or groundedness? Is that clear? Right. So retreat is a wonderful opportunity for us to put all that aside and to really have nothing else to do but cultivate in a meditative state or study or whatever we're doing. Yes, so retreat is always part of the path, and I think it's even more essential these days. Like, as we get busier, yes, it becomes more and more essential. But, and I've seen this for the decades, there are many Buddhist practitioners who live for retreat. Daily life, and it continues to suck. Okay? So if you ask me, which is most important? Daily life practice, because that's the base. Then retreat has something to, you know, return to. You know, the insights you have or the insights you have in retreat now have something stable to return to. Because if we don't have that, many times people, you know, 2 days after, 3 days after retreat, it's gone. Anybody ever notice that? Yeah. Now, why do you think that is? Right, because our daily life doesn't have enough stability in it, and the daily practice isn't, you know, strong enough to really to hold our insights. Because our insights are often up here, right? Which are okay, but what do we know about the thinking consciousness? It's interruptible. While the flow from our storehouse and our self-consciousness is continuous. Are there other questions? Yes. So the question is, just very quickly, the difference between manas and the alaya. Traditionally in Yogacara, they're both considered base consciousness, okay? Base meaning, or they're part of this deeper unseen part of our mind as opposed to the upper levels. Now, in a certain sense, the way it's postulated is the manas, or the sense of self, the subjective sense of self, kind of broke off from the storehouse. It was a part of this whole base consciousness of all experience, right? And when it was part of it, it was just part of it. It was just part of this endless process of seeds going down, seeds being cultivated, seeds going up, okay? But it broke off. And then manas is called the appropriated consciousness. It's kind of, now that it kind of stands alone, it goes, I will appropriate the storehouse and the thinking and all the senses. I will appropriate them as all part of who? Me. There's no sense of self in the storehouse consciousness. It is simply the container of the seeds. It is the seeds. It is the maintainer of the seeds, etc. Okay? It is the self that therefore, you know, it's why we talk about, you know, my issues, my past, my this, my memories, my feelings, my, you know, we claim it, the self claims it all for me, but it's not me. It's just impressions, right? It's like going through photo albums. You know, you can go through photo albums. I recently had a situation where I went through photo albums in my family. I mean, I found photos of people, many of them were of a generation that I remember, but many of them were of their prior generation, which I just heard about. Right? All those pictures, all those people, right? Just photos. It wasn't really them, was it? No. Associated with them might have been memories or feeling, but none of it is real. Is it? No. So we have all this stored memory, all these stored experiences. That's all. None of it is real now. None of it is solid. And yet we treat it like it's real, don't we? We treat the movies like they're real. The characters in them are real. They're not. They're just images. Just images. All these images that we have stored in our storehouse. Why do they have power over us? Because we think they're real, solid things. But they're really not. But that's another practice period. Other questions? Yes. Mm-hmm. Again, there is no, so the question is, well, is there, are there other, yeah, there are many ways of working with self. Generosity is just a very good way because, you know, the self only wants to be generous to itself, right? It not only always wants to give all its stuff to itself, take care of itself, buy the things that it wants, you know, take care of its needs, right? But the self loves it when other people are generous to it, doesn't it? I mean, why? So, like, you know, it just glorifies in that. Okay. So, since generosity is so self-based, learning, you know, because it's distorted by self, so learning to truly be generous, to see all the things that we are, all the things that we have, as really here for others. So, is, you know, this is why generosity is one of the paramitas. Patience. Is one of, you know, this is the path of the bodhisattva. Generosity, patience, morality. What does morality have to do with non-self? Morality is aware that the actions of our body, speech, and mind can cause harm to people. I'm going to give that up. Even though myself would like to take advantage of this situation and get something for itself. Right? I'm going to give that up. That's a good way to loosen self. To be an ethical person, right? I mean, I think we need to be aware of things, non-judgmental. I mean, I don't understand what kindness, why kindness comes into it. We need to be aware. We need to understand why it's arising, what the source is, and deal with it. In an intelligent, transformative way. Okay? Then kindness doesn't come into it, does it? Or hatred come into it. See, kindness is just the other side of hatred. And that's still caught. So really it's much better just, I mean, again, if you're caught in hatred, then obviously kindness is a good antidote. Right? So it's all developmental. That's what I'm saying, but it's really not about either one of those. Because both of those reify our sense of self. Right? And if I hate my, you know, it's like in the opening gatha. We say, may I be free from the superiority, the inferiority, and the equality complex. What does that mean? It means all the states of self. Right? I love myself. I hate myself. I think I'm better than everybody. I think I'm worse than anybody. I think I'm as good as anybody. That's all self. You know, it just takes different stances, but they can be strong. I mean, somebody who has a very strong deficiency sense of self can have a very strong self. Very strong self-identity. You see, from I know from a certain point of view, and I understand it, that obviously having a good to feel good about yourself, right, feels better and is probably better in a functional way than feeling bad about yourself. But in terms of self, they both can be as strong. You're still caught in self-centeredness. One person's going around always in every situation thinking, you know, I know better, I'm right, my values are best, my thoughts are best, my way of doing, you know. Can you see, me, I. You know, the person's going around, everybody's better than me, everybody's smarter than me, everybody knows more than me. Both are what? Focused on what? Me. Now that may be a little shocking to some people here. Please understand. We're talking about, in Yogacara and Buddhism, a psychological system that is very different than the psychological system that we've grown up with in America. This is a psychology of transformation. This is a psychology of awakening, right? This is a psychology that wants to really free us from suffering at the deepest levels. It's very different. So I say things like that which may grate against you a little bit. I understand. But again, you know, things are developmental and it all depends where we're at. So yeah, so if again, you know, developmental means things develop. And if we're here, we may need something here, right, to help us, then we need here. Right? So if you have if you broke your leg, you may need a cast and crutches. Right? Right? You don't need an ACE bandage. Right? But if you just sprained your ankle and you're wearing a cast and crutches, I'd say, you probably don't need that. It's not a matter of right or wrong, is it? It's a matter of what's appropriate. Does that make sense? So we have to understand that the Buddhist path is a developmental path. And so you'll hear lots of contradictions. You'll go, hey, what about this whole being kind to self? I understand, but that's a certain teaching, right? And this goes back to the Buddha. The Buddha taught always in terms of what was appropriate for the person he was talking to. So he could say contradictory things. But because he wasn't kind of coming from a theology. He was coming from the reality of a person that he was dealing with, a human being that he was dealing with and trying to help them. So sometime he would say, oh, you need to be kinder to yourself. Right? Somebody else comes in, he said, no. You don't need to be kinder to yourself. You need to really see that there really is no self. Okay. So we need to stop. Thank you all. So Yogacara is deep and vast, but I just want to give you a little sense of it and encourage you to reflect on what was said today. Don't remember the interrupted nature of the upper levels of our mind. You'll walk out of here, and if you don't reflect, it will be gone.